गोपी जन बाला गिरिवर
ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki, Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki, Prem Sega Ho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki, Shishi Radha Krishna Gaur Gopagavina Shamakunda Radha Kuni Giri Govardhana ki, Shri Vrindavan Dhamma ki, Shri Mayapur Dhamma ki, Ganga Maya ki, Jamuna Maya ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Tulasi Devi ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jainitai Gaur Vrindandi. All glories to Samadhi Mahesh. All glories to Samadhi Mahesh. All glories to Samadhi Mahesh. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Shri Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So page 48-47, number 19, continuing that Brahma studied the Vedas three times. And after scrutinizing, examining them, he ascertained that attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the highest perfection of religion. 19. That devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be sought among all kinds of performers of action is described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.46. Surrendered souls, even from groups leading sinful lives, such as women, the labor class, the mountaineers, and the Siberians, or even the birds and beasts, can also know about the science of Godhead and become liberated from the clutches of the illusory energy by surrendering under the pure devotees of the Lord, by following in their footsteps in devotional service. This is also explained in the Garuda Purana. Even the worms, birds, and beasts are assured of elevation to the highest perfectional life if they are completely surrendered to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So what to speak of the philosophers among human beings? All people, whether well-behaved, ill-behaved, learned, ignorant, renounced, attached, desiring liberation, already liberated, perfect in devotional service, or not yet perfect in devotional service, are eligible to become the Lord's personal associates. For this reason, a devotee sees everyone, even though they may not yet have the Lord's personal association, equally, for they are all eligible to become the Lord's associates. This is described in the following words. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. The meaning of this verse is, if this is the truth about the ill-behaved who are engaged in devotional service, what then can be said of the well-behaved who are engaged in devotional service? Nimisha. Hence another basic symptom of pure devotional service is that it is ever free of sin. Even if the aspirant to pure devotional service is not free of sin, he surely becomes so simply by surrendering to and following the lotus footsteps of pure devotees, associates of the Lord. In this way, the sinful aspirants are cleansed of all contamination and are themselves admitted into Sri Krishna's personal association. So here is mentioned surrendered souls. So this is a very, very important element. Is that that surrender to Krishna, connection to Krishna, we have to understand is the perfection. He is the perfect. He is God. But the point is he's not necessarily the kind of God we're used to. He's actually a nice person, right? Like he's not this fearsome, you know, nasty person that every time you do something wrong, then a thunderbolt comes out of the blue and zop, you know, and then there's a little pile of dust sitting there. Like that, excuse me, ash, right? No, but from dust you came, from dust also becomes, whatever. Huh?
Vibhuti.
Vibhuti, yes. Vibhuti. So, that's an important element. Because God's a person, he's nice. So he actually has affection for us, but he gives us, he reciprocates with us how we want to see him, and he gives us medicine according to correct ourselves according to what we need. So then here is that if someone surrendered to the Lord, it doesn't actually matter what their background is or what position they're at present, because everybody's qualified to go back to Godhead. It's not that somebody's qualified, somebody's not. This is the actual viewpoint. How you say? The vision in the mode of goodness means you see all souls equal. Right? It means that everybody is a servant of God. And everybody can take up that service and perfect themselves. Seeing that this group can, this group can't, this one's qualified, this one's unqualified, that's the mode of passion. Right? Does that make sense? Very important point. Because otherwise, this group can go, okay, if you're from this denomination or this religion, then you'll attain perfection. Everybody else is a sinner. Right? That's motive passion. Because you're distinguishing between souls. But soul is the same category. Right? Satchitananda. It's not that some are Satchitananda and some are, you know, Asit Chit Ananda, or some are Sat As Achit Ananda, or some are Satchit and, you know, misery, you know, no, like that. It's they're all the same. So this distinguishing is that, oh, this person is badly behaved, they can't go. No, it's not that. If they're surrendered, they're following the process, then they will be purified. And here they've given a very wide range of seeming disqualifications, and even they include the animals, right? Animals and birds, even they can go back to Godhead by this process, right? Means Lord Chaitanya, we saw that Shivananda's like dog went back to Godhead, like that. So it follows for everyone there. So, I said, yeah. Yeah. You want to say something? Okay. Is that any questions on this? Yes.
What is the difference between sin and aparad?
What's the difference between sin and aparad? Sin means it's against, how you say, it's the breakage of your standard rules of, how you say, regulatory life. Right? Aparad would mean that it's specifically you're being behaving offensively towards a personality. Does that make sense? Sin is generic. Aparad is generally directed at a person. Right? In other words, it's a breakage in the relationship. That's would be aparad. A breakage in a rule, like you didn't take your bath in the morning, or you know, you ate something you shouldn't have, or like that. That's, you understand? In other words, if it... Yeah.
Now, can I comment that if you take sin, as Prabhupada often explains it, in terms of karma, then there's that application, that you've done something against the general law of human nature.
Mm-hmm.
That would apply to anybody, devotees, non-devotees. But if one is a devotee, you see, then there's a consideration of what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that if one is actually rightfully situated in one's heart, then that sin, in other words, that transgression of the law of nature, karmic law, should not be taken into account. Aparad is something that generally, of course, we see demons, purposeful demons, who you know purposefully hate the Lord and the Lord's devotees, they commit aparads. But generally, aparad is something within the sphere of devotional service. After one has become a devotee, then if one transgresses a principle of devotional service, which as Maharaj says, ultimately is all, devotional service is personal, so aparads are always ultimately personal. If you make a nam-aparad, it's an aparad against Krishna. It's a person in Krishna, it's not an abstract thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakura breaks it down to four kinds of aparad. There's nama aparad, there's jiva aparad, there's... That's in Harinam Chintamani.
See, even the dogs are coming to the class.
Dogs? Yeah. Jiva aparad. Anyway, he breaks it down to something like four categories of aparad. So these things would be done by, you know, this is generally given as a warning against devotees not to do these things. Because as a devotee, one's protected against sinful reaction. In a sense, all of us are committing sins all the time. You see, even as devotees. That's why in the Vedas there's this Pancha Yajna.
Pancha Mahayagya.
Yeah, Pancha Mahayagya. Five kinds of sacrifices you're supposed to perform every day just to counteract daily sins. But we don't worry about that because we're chanting Hare Krishna and engaged. But if one is committing aparad, you know, and and it becomes a regular feature of one's so-called devotional life to continue to commit aparads, then it's clearly stated this will cause the papa bijas, the sinful desires, to grow in the heart. And then one will become sinful. One will gradually be transferred, out of that umbrella of protection which is reserved for devotees into the field of karma. You see? This is like when Krishna says, Namam Jishkatina Mudha Vanyade Naradama. There are four kinds of persons who never surrendered to me. And then there are four kinds of, so he's talking about four kinds of Jishkatinas and four kinds of Sipratinas. So the four kinds of Sipratinas can engage in devotional service of four different degrees. And Krishna says they're all Mahatmas. That means they're all under his protection. But then there's four kinds of Jishkatinas, even Maya Pratigyanas, then they have great knowledge in Veda and everything. But Krishna says, because they don't surrender to me, they're Dushkritina, the Krit, like create. You see, in the English language, create. So Prabhupada said, man creates his destiny. This is again coming back to karma. So if we are not under Krishna's protection, then everything we're doing, as Prabhupada said, is creating the next body. And that's a result of, actually we all originally started, we understand from Prabhupada, in the safe position. We're all originally liberated spirit souls with relationship to Krishna. And we've fallen under this mechanistic rule of karma. And the reason for that is because of aparad.
So is aparad considered worse than sin?
Yeah.
It's a cause of it.
Yeah. Because sin is something that can be easily corrected. It's more easily corrected. Aparad means that is actually a change of mentality. Sin, you could not change the mentality, but change the behavior and get rid of it. But aparad, you have to change the mentality. You know what I'm saying? In other words, let's say I have a nasty temperament, and so then I deal roughly with devotees. That would be offensive. So to stop that, I would actually have to change the mentality. Because even if let's say you're dealing in the material platform, even I'm a nasty person, but I know how to, just the proper etiquette of social intercourse, I could get rid of the sin of being improperly behaved, but it wouldn't change the mentality. But with the devotees, if you don't change the mentality, then you will, in your mind and to yourself, you'll be commenting about them. So it will have an effect, yeah.
There's some, we find in the Vaishnava Shastri statements, if one sees a devotee and does not feel emblazoned in one's heart,
mm-hmm.
then that's mm-hmm. a great aparad. If one,
yeah.
you see, mm-hmm. is not eager to join the association of devotees and talk about Krishna, these are also aparads. These are very subtle things, but Krishna. Nothing is hidden from Krishna. Krishna takes into account. And by this attitude, we're showing Krishna whether we ourselves actually. The whole point here is about surrender. If we surrender to Krishna, then we can overcome. One may be a mountaineer, a Siberian, or even a bird or a beast. You can overcome that if you surrender to Krishna. But these things we're speaking of now, that I see a devotee and instead of feeling gladdened, I think, oh, that guy. Oh, I know that guy. Yeah, I'm one of you on him. then this is not certainly not as simple as surrender. And Krishna takes that into account.
Yes. There's the element, I was just thinking of it when I was just talking, is that, see, whatever is done here is actually, it's based on a principle that's important in the spiritual world. Right? There's nothing that's here that's not based on what's there. Right? So, otherwise we tend to think, well, there's a whole separate thing there and a whole separate thing here. That's also the mode of passion. They create this duality. But it's actually because you have to be, you know, happy about devotees and this and that. At the same time, as we see, as Rupa Goswami says, you associate with like-minded persons. So there is some discrimination, but it's not that you're unhappy about being in the association of Vaishnavas, right? So, because all devotees are dear to Krishna, and they all are performing their particular service according to the taste for Krishna. So that has to be respected. Even though our taste may be very different. Right? Because when we get to the spiritual world, there is a lot of different varieties of devotees. Right? And so you have to be able to move to that, especially in like in Braja. I mean, you have all the different rasas, and they're basically competing for Krishna's attention. Right? And so you have to be able to respect them all, but stay within your group. Does that make sense? Because even in Vaikuntha, I mean, as we see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the variety of devotees like that, I mean, Gopakumar was amazed that there's all these devotees coming in the morning when they open the gates of Vaikuntha, and they're coming in and they're all like Kinaras and Kimpurushas and stuff like that, which means, you know, human bodies, animal heads. And they're all walking in to go see the Lord. So, you know, it's like, you know, you got to get used to it. There's a lot of things going on up there. So here we have to be able to follow etiquettes with everybody and be pleasant, nice, properly behaved. At the same time as we seek out that association which is specifically we find inspiring and uplifting. Is that? Yeah?
Very subtle.
Yeah, very subtle. Yeah, because it means everything goes back and forth. It all has this. Everything in the spiritual world is reflected here, but it just doesn't have its fullness in the reflection. It means there are buildings there, so therefore there's trees there, there's trees here. But the quality of the building, the trees, everything doesn't have what it does there. You know, it's like the tree on the bank and the tree in the water. They look exactly the same. But you don't get the touch and the smell and taste and everything out of the tree in the water. But its principle is the same. The roots, you know, connected to the ground. The branches are up. The flowers and leaves are out on the ends of the branches. It's the same. It doesn't work differently.
You just said something very interesting, so extend the thought about the difference between the spiritual world and the material world. So in Kali Yuga, because this is the fallen age, actually sin is something gross, because we are forgiven automatically just by being born in this age. The Lord is so merciful that sins of the mind don't count.
Okay.
We're talking again about karmic transgressions, you see. Like, one might contemplate some time in the mind, some sinful activity, and then, oh, this is nonsense. In earlier ages, and this is going right to the point Maharaj was just making, you see, you go back in the yugas, then the material world and the spiritual world are actually closer.
Because
the people are more qualified.
Yeah,
you see, there's actually more congress between,
even in
Dwarpa Yuga, congress between demigods and humans is very common.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go further and further, and it becomes, you know, the Lord is coming and going. You know, you find in great Vedic sacrifices, in Treta Yuga, it was not uncommon for the Lord himself to appear.
Yeah.
and receive the offering. You know, with his associates, the offerings of great Rajarshis. But now in Kali Yuga, there's a definite, you know, this is a very, the most gross age, sinful age. So this is the age least like the spiritual world. So therefore sin is, it's a matter of, it's gross. But aparad is always very subtle.
Subtle, yeah.
Because, again, it means, to commit aparad means you're somehow or other connected with devotional service. I probably, actually Prabhupada said openly that, and he writes it in his books, that demons are entering the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. There's a statement like that.
Yeah, he says there's many, many.
So that, that we need not, you know, in the light of what we just read here, you know, one need not be paranoid, oh, who's a demon, you know. we should be thinking, this process is so glorious, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, most merciful, avatar shiromani, is giving everyone the opportunity. So even a demon is given the chance to become a pure devotee. But if we, you know, insist in importing the demoniac propensity into the realm of devotional service, even if it's very, very subtle, then it may not be a sin, because it's so subtle. It may not be a sin, but it will be aparad, and aparad will lead to sin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see these great places. I think it was that story of... I don't remember. I remember in Radhakund. He was, I think at the time of Vishwanath, he was like the head of the Vaishnavas. And I don't remember what it was about, but do you remember?
Yeah, it was she was chanting during the recitation.
Yeah. And then he got upset. And she just said, my mouth goes on chanting. I'm listening to you. Mouth just chants. It's his habit. And he didn't appreciate it. So he was saying all kinds of things. And then very, very slowly, he just fell until he just went back to his village back here in Bengal and just became an ordinary person. I can't remember his name. You know?
Rupa Kaviraj.
Rupa Kaviraj. That was Rupa Kaviraj.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Yeah, because he's written, there's some things he's written, and it's interesting, some of our, on this very point, some former members of ISKCON who left to become scholars, you know, Sanskrit scholars, scholars of Vaishnavism, and they've actually kind of, one of them I know has even taken up the flag of this Rupa Kaviraj and translated some of his things, and you know, he was a great devotee and this and that. And so you see how...
Just to be different. Academic.
Like I say, birds of a feather.
Yeah. Okay, bottom of the page. What does it mean to associate with pure devotees? Bhaktisandarbha Anucheda 94 makes it clear it means shravanam, hearing. By hearing, one passes via vichar, study, from the initial stage, bhakti jnana viti, logical appreciation, to faith, then from faith to taste. This is why Lord Chaitanya Dev gave the following instruction in CC Madhya 25.153. Ata eva bhagavata karaha vichar, iha haite pave sutra, Shurutira Artasar. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised Prakashananda Saraswati, study Srimad Bhagavatam very scrutinizingly, then you will understand the actual meaning of Brahma Sutra. In this connection, note 26 purport, 27th, 30th, 35th, 36th, and 37th purports. 1. The path of they who consider love for the Lord most important, a path that begins with hearing, is described in the following words, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.2.6.
O Vyasadev, in the association and by the mercy of those great Vedantists, I could hear them describe the attractive features of Lord Krishna. And thus, listening attentively, my taste for hearing of the personality of Godhead increased at every step. The activity of hearing performed by they who think knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is most important is described in the four famous verses, Chatur Shloki of Srimad Bhagavatam. These persons' activity of thinking is described in the following words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.34. The great personality Brahma, with great attention and concentration of the mind, studied the Vedas three times, and after scrutinizing and examining them, he ascertained that attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the highest perfection of religion. Also notice these verses come up again. Well, you mentioned repetition, but it also is vichar. In other words, he's studying the same verse from different angles. Right? So we see this verse so far now has come up like three or four times, but it always in a different anucheta. So it's a different theme. Right? Faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is created by such study and thinking, is described in the following words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.27.30. My dear respectable ladies and gentlemen, according to the authoritative statements of Shastra, there must be a supreme authority who is able to award the respective benefits of our present activities. Otherwise, why should there be a persons who are unusually beautiful and powerful both in this life and in the life after death? This is confirmed not only by the evidence of the Vedas, but also by the personal behavior of great personalities like Manu, Uttanapada, Dhruva, Priyavrata, and my grandfather Anga, as well as by many other great personalities and other ordinary living beings, exemplified by Maharaj Prahlad and Bali, all of whom are theists, believing in the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who carries the club. Although abominable persons like my father, Vena, the grandson of death personified, are bewildered on the path of religion, all the great personalities like those mentioned agree that in this world, the only bestower of the benedictions of religion, economic development, sense gratification, liberation, or elevation to the heavenly planets is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse says, my dear respectable ladies and gentlemen, Artha Satama, according to the authoritative statements of Shastra, there must be a supreme authority who is able to award the respective benefits of our present activities, Yajnapati. That is the opinion of the scriptures, Kesan Chit. Still fearing that some might foolishly try to dispute this truth and present another inevitably illogical opinion, the Bhagavatam gives the fact that the living entities are placed by destiny in a variety of situations in this world as evidence of the Supreme Lord's existence. The Bhagavatam explains, otherwise, why should there be persons who have unusually beautiful or powerful jyotishnavatya bodies, bhavuva, both in this life and in the life after death? In other words, if there were no Supreme Lord, then this would not be so. This is the meaning. The inert and unconscious material matter has no power by itself to give the living entities the results of their actions. This is confirmed in the following words of Vedanta Sutra 3.2.39. Because it is logical to assume that there must be a person who awards the results of action. 9. The many demigods are not independent. That is confirmed by Antaryami Sruti. They are not as powerful as the Supreme Lord, and they are not independent in awarding the various results of action. Therefore, it is the independent Supreme Personality of Godhead alone who gives the results of actions. In the next three verses, Srimad Bhagavatam 4.21.28.30, the opinions of great self-realized souls is given as evidence to confirm the truth of this. Here the words asmat pitu meaning of my grandfather Anga, because they were learned in the Vedic scriptures. Maharaj Prahlad and Maharaj Bali are also counted there. These great persons all affirm Krityamasti, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Gadabrita, is always present in everyone's heart, and outside the heart also. That is the meaning here. Or the words Krityamasti may mean it is the personality of Godhead alone and not anyone else who is the supreme controller. Then the atheists are criticized in the words, Dauhitradin mrityor dharma vimohitan. Abominable persons like my father, Vena, the grandson of death, are bewildered on the path of religion. In this way, scripture, logic, and opinions of great enlightened souls combine to affirm that Lord Vishnu, who is here called by the name Garabhrita, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here you have scripture, logic, and opinions of the great enlightened souls. You still have the triangle. So he's pointing out here is that you can see is that there must be a Supreme Lord. Otherwise, how is it you get the variety that's here? Right? Dead matter gives no variety. Right? We put a bunch of rocks, let them sit there. Come back after a billion years, still the rocks are sitting there. Come back after, you know, a million years, they'll still be sitting there. You know, just however long you come, they'll be sitting right there. Nothing happens. Right? So that there's various things means there must be someone in control. Right? And we see it's consistent. One may say, oh, it's chance. Then why, if it's chance, why does everybody in the planet say, this person looks beautiful? Right? Like you go in China and they want to advertise something. They'll put a beautiful woman on there. And they don't care if it's Chinese or European. If does that make sense? Because the principles of beauty everybody accepts. Right? If it's all chance, why are all the trees the roots down, the branches up? Why don't we see any tree the other way around? Right? It never happens. Right? Fish flap their tails and move forward. Right? They don't flap the tail and you know something else happens. You understand? It's always the same. So that means someone's in control because the material energy can't do that. And then he's pointing out is that persons like his father, Vena, grandson of the death personified, Vena's mother was the daughter of death personified. When Yamaraj is there, he has, I think, death, and I forget who's the other one. There's two persons that are always with him.
Time.
So they're there. And so death's daughter was Vena's mother. Like that. So he got, because the mother takes on the qualities of the father. I mean, the daughter takes on the qualities of the father, the son of the mother. So then that means the qualities of death personified came in Vena. Because he's the, you know, it would have reversed from the father to the daughter, daughter to the son. Like that. And so Manu mentions that he's the one that started, I think, remarriage. I think he's given the credit for
Vena.
Vena, yeah. It means that this, I think that's the one. But it's actually mentioned that he actually started some of these irreligious activities. They became popular in his reign, and they've been there ever since. But it's he started so many of these. You know, that was his point. He couldn't understand what was religion or irreligion, so he used like that.
It's interesting to note here that faith, as explained in this section, is, we look at the end where it's summarized. In this way, scripture, logic, and the opinions of great enlightened souls combine to affirm that Lord Vishnu, who is here called by the name Garabhrita, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Maharaj Pitu was giving, as you can say, empirical evidence that look at this world, there are people in high places, low places, but it didn't simply rest on that. He's also referring to Shastra, he's also referring to great personalities, great authorities in devotional service. He's named them. And then he refers to those who are clearly off the path of religion, who could not understand these things. You see, this is the problem with the demons, that they think by their own power that they can attain exalted position, you know, so they can become God, or some exalted position in this world. breaking all the rules along the way. So actually the foundation of faith, we put here in this introduction, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised Prakasananda Saraswati, study Srimad Bhagavatam very scrutinizingly, then you will understand the actual meaning of Brahma Sutra. Brahma Sutra by itself, this is Jnana Yoga, and this is actually for even faithless persons, you see. It's open, it's a Vedanta Sutra is a, you can see today, for most people it's a puzzle, and they just come into it and speculate, and 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100 come to the wrong conclusion, because they don't have faith. So that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was advising study Srimad Bhagavatam, and that means in the association of devotees, and that means according to the explanation of previous authorities, and that means according to the line of logic that Maharaj Pritu, who himself is a great personality in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a tradition that study. So it's not this simplistic faith, just I believe in God. This Bhagavata faith is, Prabhupada used to say this again and again, that people, when we go out, of course, this is the Yuga Dharma, when we go out and chant Hare Krishna. But anyone who thinks that that's all it is just a bunch of silly people playing instruments and singing the same thing over and over again like idiots. No, there is background. And we have these books. That is what is the background of this demonstration of faith, you might say, this religious practice of... Everyone recognizes when devotees go on kirtan, it's religious, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Universally, they know. They know.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately what that is. But as Prabhupada said, there's a great background to this faith that the devotees are showing, this religious activity. And that is the study of Srimad Bhagavatam, which entails all of what Maharaj has read and discussed in these 2 pages.
Yeah, so you're pointing out is that faith is important, but that comes from hearing. Because unless you hear, whatever you hear, that's what you get your faith in. You hear about material life, you get faith in it. You hear about spiritual life, you get faith in that. So therefore, keep the association where you're going to hear something worth hearing. Like that. Oh, it says hearing. So how does it get from... Okay. Now here it mentions, how does it get from hearing to faith? It says via vichar, study. So that's why you see he's recommended you study very scrutinizingly. Because hearing, that is contemplated, that turns into faith. Because actually faith is, how do you say? A result, realization, it's observable, right? It's not theory. So it's like shravana, you hear, manana, you contemplate, you scrutinize, you practice, nididhyasana, then you get faith. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's important because it mentions the what actually changes it is the application. So thinking is good for developing faith. Right? It's not necessarily good for collecting money, but it's great for developing faith. Like that. Sri Paramatma Sandarbha 108.9 on the use of the Vedic reference and logic in Srimad Bhagavatam, see 35th purport. Anucheda 108. The purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam is described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 12.13.1. I offer my respectful obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom Brahma, Indra, Shiva, and the Maruts glorify with splendid prayers, whom the chanters of the Samaveda glorify by singing the Vedas with their parts, Padakramas and Upanishads.
whom the yogis see in their hearts wrapped in meditation, and whose limit neither the demigods nor the demons can ever find. Here the words stavar vedai stunvanti means they glorify with prayers and with the Vedas, and jnanavastita tadgatena manasa means with minds fixed in unwavering meditation.
But it just struck me here on this is that it appears that this kind of like taking words, defining them and everything is like, you know, different from what we're used to. But it just struck me this must be where Prabhupada takes when he gives the shloka and then word for word. Because you notice in the word for word, it's not necessarily just straight the word. It's exactly the context, meaning, and sometimes even extension, explanation, like that. So he's just using a very standard method of the acharyas, and he's introduced in his books in such a way we take it as just normal.
It's important to note that we've just entered a section which is applicable to put here C35P. That's that very long purport Srila Prabhupada gives. It's a walkthrough on meditation on Paramatma. Prabhupada gives in that purport. It's very many pages and it's illuminating to read. Because if you read and follow what Prabhupada says, you actually yourself get the insight which is now being discussed in these anuchedas by Srila Jiva Goswami. So these comments of Jiva Goswami pertain to that
purport. To that purport.
Yeah. That what Prabhupada is giving in that purport is referring to Vedic logic, the Vedic authorities and the Vedic prospects of introspection described here. What is that word? Jnanavastita tatatena manasa, with minds fixed in unwavering meditation, because that's the conclusion of that purport.
Mm-hmm.
One actually can come to a logical insight of the existence of Paramatma in the heart just by reading that purport.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. It's interesting just to say the authority, logic, and introspection. Because authority means that's what it's based on, and that's fixed, that's real. Logic means then how to, using the intelligence, define it so that it clears any doubts or misgivings of the mind. And introspection means now you'll use that process on yourself specifically. You know, how to apply it, like that. Because introspection means you have to be able to discern, find out, and then use that logical process to apply that aphorism that's given in the Shastra. Does that make sense? Of course. No, this was a comment on that. Don't think, just get out there and do your service. So that's all right when someone is so mental that their contemplation actually stops them from doing service. That's used. But unfortunately, then when devotees mature and they actually start asking questions, because it's a very easy, straightforward way of dealing and managing. You know, it's like, you know, one shoe fits all. Then the tendency is, as devotees mature, the same process is applied because it's not seen as pragmatic. Because pragmatic means you get the result yesterday. And if you have to contemplate, and then therefore later on you will get some benefit, then that's another thing. You know, it's not seen. It's just like, let's say, in another external example with, let's say, martial arts. You have hard forms, soft forms. Soft forms, you take something like Tai Chi. You just learn how to move the airs and everything, and actually you don't have anything to fight with for 10 years, basically. But after 10 or 15 years, you can do way more than the persons who are just very good at punching and kicking and only know the externals, only using muscles. So, therefore, is to be practical, then you use systems that combine the two. So you have technique that you can use today, but you're also cultivating that which, when you do develop it, then it actually is much more efficient than just external, you know, technique like that. So it was a side comment on that. It should have been more, filled out. So
and we should be able to see from what we've been reading today. I don't know if we've yet come across the word buddhi, but
no,
actually that is
yet.
The focus here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Prabhupada always used to say, the buddhi or the intellect is right next to the soul.
Soul, yeah.
And
the
buddhi, this is what Krishna is speaking of in Bhagavad Gita, buddhi yoga. We're not yet bhaktas. We're not yet motivated. Well, you know, once in a while we get some sentiment, you know, obviously all of us, otherwise we wouldn't be here. But I don't think any of us here, at least I can't honestly say that everything I do 24 hours a day is motivated by a deep sentiment of love of Krishna, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually, we're doing this mainly because of buddhi, because we know if we don't do, we know. And then this goes back to the deep grounding of faith in Krishna consciousness. You know, faith is not just some will-o'-the-wisp. You know, oh, I believe. Yeah, this sounds good, I believe in it. But actually, it's deeply grounded in this buddhi. You were using those Vedic terms.
Shravanamanana nididhyasana.
Yeah, nididhyasana.
Nididhyasana.
Nididhyasana, yeah. So again, there's background. So we have to keep, Maharaj was talking about martial arts training. This is essential in devotional service, that you have to keep the buddhi in shape,
mm-hmm.
you see. I remember many years ago, I used to travel with, when I was a brahmachari with Vishnu Jan Maharaj, many, many years ago, and this was one of his regular themes. He had a very nice sort of sutra that when we'd read things like this, I remember hearing many classes from him on the second canto, and he would sort of condense it down to a sutra. You have to satisfy your intelligence. You have to keep your intelligence satisfied in Krishna consciousness. It's very, very important. And that's why Prabhupada would say, study the scripture and see it from different angles. Always see new lights. You see? This is satisfying the buddhi. And this is keeping, because the buddhi is next to the soul, so this is keeping us in spiritual shape. Because the soul is not yet ready to stand on its own. You see? In devotional service, just on the strength of rati, attraction to Krishna. You see, spiritually, at least I can say for myself, you know, not ready just to stand on that, the soul's own attraction. So therefore, the backup of buddhi yoga, that's essential to Bhagavad Gita, and that's what this is about. So if we let the buddhi become weak because of, frankly, lethargy, what is it Krishna warns about in Gita? Egoism or lethargy? These are two ways in which the buddhi can become weak. Egoism means you think, I've heard all this before, I know what it's about. There's no more need for me to read Srila Prabhupada's books carefully or to carefully hear from advanced devotees or to put serious questions. I don't know all this. You see. Or egoism in our dealings in devotional service, our activities in devotional service, which means what we were talking about before, aparad. If there's egoism, then there's no more discrimination. You see, one has lost the discrimination between matter and spirit. So then one may be going through the motions of devotional service, but one will be committing aparad, and that's going to be... That's like, you know, the cartoon... To see these cartoons, a guy standing on the wooden floor and the saw coming up, sawing a circle. And you see, one may think one's well situated, but one's position is becoming weaker by the moment, and one isn't noticing it because of egoism. And then the other side is lethargy, just sheer laziness, just due to whatever. Well, due to bad association, actually, which begins up here, what we're associating with in our own minds, our own consciousness. And then that will lead to association, you know, certain types of association with others, either directly, personally, or, you know, through hearing or reading or whatever. One becomes spiritually lazy, spiritually indifferent, probably. Uses this word, indifferent.
Mm.
And that again.
Oh, wow. Connected it. Because I was noticing, because you're saying false ego and ignorance or lethargy.
Yeah.
But they both stem out of the sambandha. Mm-hmm. So, because that's where ignorance is, that's your existence. So it's either your existence is either illuminated, you know, if it's spiritual, or if it's mundane, then it's ignorance. And I was wondering that the two is that then the false ego is the field. Because I, you know, I've heard this, it's the field, so there's not much. And then you're saying that there's no interest in it. You know, that would be the lethargy, because there's no, the prajumna aspect of the sambandha is not there. There's no attraction to it. So therefore, if there's no attraction, it can't go to the prayojana. You can't get a result. Yeah.
Because before we were reading it, we were probably defining gyan as meaning this chitragya.
Mm-hmm.
There was already cited in an earlier chapter, Prabhupada expressly defining jnana or transcendental knowledge as chitra jnana, understanding how the soul is situated in this body at present.
Mm-hmm.
And that means, this is what Maharaj is talking about. Sambandha gyan, seeing all of that connected to Krishna, you see. Otherwise, it just becomes, it's just theory, you see. Like the Maya bodies or the impersonalist Brahma bodies, just thinking, I'm not this body, but in order to realize this, then you have to know how to engage this body. All the constituents, these different elements, been presented so far by Sukadeva Goswami in this canto, all of that has to be engaged in Krishna's service constantly, and that requires interest, and that requires basically the pushing of intelligence to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's again this chitragya. This is the Buddhi Yoga that Krishna is speaking of. This is what he's telling Arjuna. He's pointing out to Arjuna, you see, you know, not only that Arjuna is spirit soul, but what Arjuna's nature is, where you are, you're on this battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these considerations, not only of Arjuna as spirit soul, if it was just left at that, you see, if that was gyan, Krishna telling Arjuna, you're not the body, you're spirit soul, business finished, then Arjuna would have every reason just to walk off the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what am I doing here? You know, what's the point?
You know?
But Krishna, you know, Krishna puts that knowledge of spirit soul in the context of a chitra, the field of battle, and gives Arjuna his duty for me. And so if we become, either by egoism or lethargy, indifferent to that, just disinterested in that, then we'll be led astray by Maya.
You have the element of, if you take it on the higher level, that you have the Buddha Yoga. Because basically Buddha Yoga is how you get yourself from from Agyata Sukriti up to Bhava. Because in a Bhava, one is freed, one is liberated. But then, so now the actual ego is situated. And so, but if there is not an attraction to Krishna, if one's lethargic, then one does not progress. In fact, that's how, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then describes in that Brahman and Vaishnava, that's how we got here, is that we were situated, properly in the spiritual platform, but we were lethargic in our attraction to Krishna. And if there's no, in other words, it has to be dynamic. If you're not attracted to that, neutrality will turn into inimicalness. And so then, in that way, then we fall away from Krishna. So these are very important points that don't just, that's all jnana and all that. You're going to come up against them again when you have your spiritual form, you're in the spiritual world, in the Lord's pastimes. You have to be interested to want to be part of it. Not just, hey, I'm out of the material world, the spiritual world's a great place. Because that means you're situated properly. Okay, you've corrected the Sankarshan aspect, but unless the Prajumna aspect is there, where there's attraction to the Lord, then you're not going to get anywhere. One has to... Does that make sense? The buddhi means this material buddhi of, the tattva elements isn't so important. So the ability to distinguish between one item and the next, it's not used for tattva, but it's used for rasa, because you have to be able to discriminate in rasa, otherwise that's why there's rasa-bhas. Rasa-bhas means the inability to distinguish. So the intelligence is used, but now it's within the realm of devotional activities like that. What would be, in this situation, the best thing to do to please Krishna? What would be the most appropriate? What would give the best result? So intelligence is still used there. But it's not material anymore, where it's jnana, like that.
Yeah, devotees need to understand, when you say there's a spiritual body, it means the full complement. When we talk, like Prabhupada says, Atman can be defined as soul, mind, or body. And so in the spiritual world, all of that constitutes a siddhadeha. You have a spiritual form, but you have a spiritual mentality, also a spiritual identity, and a spiritual intelligence. If you really want to get up there, that's all part of the Ekadasha Bhava.
Who you are, what you can do.
It's all part of the same package. It's not just that the soul just goes up and see how haunted we are by impersonalism. That the soul will just leave. We think, I have so much trouble with my mind and these subtle things, and one day my soul is just going to leave and float off into some,
like the birds,
place where there'll be no more trouble anymore. I won't have to think. I won't have to. It's not like that. You will have to think about Krishna. You will have to engage your senses in Krishna's service. You will, have to know what to do and what is not to be done. Otherwise, you can't have a personal relationship with Krishna.
Means you're going to have that thing of the application of here is you seek out those that are like-minded, because then you advance in devotional service. The same thing is there in the spiritual world. is seek out those devotees that are performing services that you want to serve, that they're better at it, so you follow them. You know, so the same principle is there. It doesn't change. Okay. You have something? Yeah, that would be there, but there still would be a more subtle differentiation, because the one is that you're distinguishing here, and it's actually, we're dealing with the path of jnana, is that, in other words, the sambandha jnana, sambandha tattva, that, you know, we're jivas, he's God, and if we allow, you know, we're not the controllers, he's the controller, all this kind of knowledge is useful up to Brahma Bhuta. But once it's at Brahma Bhuta, one doesn't have to distinguish like that. Then it's a matter of, okay, you know, Mother Jashoda thinks, okay, what I cooked this yesterday, what should I cook today? So her intelligence will go through what are the hundreds of options that she could do, and chooses what would be appropriate for the time, the weather, you know, what mood he was in, what, you know, everything like that. And so intelligence is used, it's different.
We've covered that in the differentiation between, what was that, labdho pasanti
srupa opasanti.
Labdhi. So the labdho pasanta stage is Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. One becomes completely satisfied, Atmarana, in one's spiritual identity. So, then there's, as Maharaj says, there's not this necessity to always be discriminating. So, this is, for example, the four Kumaras are incarnations of the Lord's Jnana Shakti in full. Mm. So they can go anywhere. And they can, you know, leave the material world and go right up to the gate of Vaikuntha. But then you see right there, then the question of, you know, what's right behavior, what's wrong. You know, that whole pastime of Jai and Vijay,
That's interesting.
You know, is very instructive. Because what you find there is that actually, one way of looking at this, if you read carefully, if you read that pastime carefully, is that the Lord gave the four Kumaras a break.
Because
The four Kumaras started to realize, actually, it was us who committed the apparatus. You know? And then Jai and Vijay, because they are actually Nitya Parsadas, they're eternal associates of the Lord, out of, you know, this conviction that we're never going to be separate from Krishna. They agreed to go, you know, to go down and take three births as demons and be opponents of the Lord, because they were swarupopalabdhi. They had their swarup, whereas the four Kumaras were not. You know, they were labdho prasanti, and they started to realize that the difference. You know. Actually, they started. They even told the Lord, "You can curse us. You know, you can whatever you want to do with us is fine." Realizing.
Does that make sense? Is it just the difference in the discrimination? Okay, so we should continue. Gruntaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jaya Nitai Gaura Parimana ki. Amazing, his presentation is so logical and so thorough. Technically, there are no places in between to actually stop that you finish something and make a point. Because as soon as he's finished it, he shows how that's going to give you this, and that's going to go into this, and then immediately goes into it. So technically, there's no breaks.
Yeah.
You know? You kind of just have to take them. But it's the logic is just so well done. And I can see why other scholars read Jiva Goswami, just because it's like probably just so intellectually refreshing, the completeness of, you know, his presentation.
Thank you.